Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Klass as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. The future of wireless is here, and it's transparent. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees, no surprises, no, really.
What are you waiting for? Get with the times and switch to Visible at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Top Thrill 2 is like no other course. Two 420-foot vertical speedways, three launches.
All right, let's talk strategy.
Copy that, driver. Go for maximum acceleration off the start.
Measure that.
You've got a short straightaway to push from 0 to 74 on the first vertical speedway.
And what about the rollback?
Rollback will set you up for an explosive reverse climb 420 feet in the sky so you reach 0 G's in total weightlessness.
420 feet of straight-up speed. Let's get it.
Top Thrill 2, the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch strata coaster. Get your tickets at cedarpoint.com.
Welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey, welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind. My name is Robert Lamb.
And my name is Julie Henry Douglas.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
That's really your middle name?
No. But if I could choose a guy's name, I think it would be Henry.
Henry?
Good, solid name to me.
Henry. I guess, yeah. It's kind of ordinary, but that's the thing about names. So often they're ordinary, and then what happens when they're a little different?
Henry James, and it's all about associations, right?
Oh, Henry James, that is good. That is good. Yeah, there are so many associations with names. There's family history. Names are both so simple and too simple, and then just overly complicated the more you look at it.
And could they possibly be so freighted with meaning that they come to actually form who we are?
Yeah, that's the thing. The name that you're given, is the name the secret ruler of your life? Did that determine everything in your life from the cradle to the grave, all because your mother or father decided to name you, say Sue?
I was about to say Johnny Cash had an idea about this long before researchers started to say what are the cognitive effects of naming children.
Yeah, or rather Sheryl Silverstein did.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, he wrote the lyrics to that song. Or rather, that was his poem that became the Johnny Cash song.
I did not know that. Yeah. That makes it even better. Shall I?
Go for it, yeah.
My daddy left home when I was 3, and he didn't leave much to Ma and me. Just this old guitar and an empty bottle of booze. Now, I don't blame him because he run and hid. But the meanest thing he ever did was before he left, he went and named Miss Sue.
And then, of course, the song goes on and on to detail his life as a boy named Sue.
It's a rough life. It's a hard life. But eventually, he confronts his father.
He says, he's pretty much like, why did you do that? And his dad's like, well, I know it's a rough life, and I thought you had to be tough. So, of course, I named you Sue so that you'd have, like, a backbone.
Yeah.
And that's how much I love you, because I knew I wasn't going to be there.
Yeah, he's saying, I essentially put a target on your head, because I knew that either everyone around you would destroy you, or and what did, you know, as Nietzsche says, what doesn't destroy me makes me stronger. So that was the whole idea here.
Yeah, that's what Sheryl Silverstein was going for, a little Nietzsche.
Yeah. Yeah, and I can't help but, I mean, we've both been through the naming process for a child at this point.
Yeah.
Did you have any names that you ended up rejecting?
But obviously I liked them. They were on my list, you know, but But my grandmother used to ask every day, like, what are you going to name her? What are you going to name her? And I would just come up with ridiculous names to annoy her.
Yeah.
Garlic sorbet.
Ooh, that's a good one.
Toadstool ivory.
Nice.
A period person. A person. You?
Oh, yeah. I had a short list. Sagan.
Okay.
That was a strong contender. Atreyu. Zivon. Shoehorn. Qantas.
Mm-hmm.
Nyarlathotep, Yog-Sothoth, but ended up just going with Sebastian instead.
Which is great. I love that name. But yeah, this becomes a really important thing, this naming of the child. And in fact, it's so important that, you know, people publish tons of books about it, like name-giving advice. And there was even a 2010 British study of 3,000 parents that revealed that 1 in 5 parents regret the name that they chose for their child. So it would make sense that a parenting website like, I don't know, Baby Center would be so well visited by parents to see what are the most popular names for boys and girls. But also they put out information like, what are the weirdest names? And in 2013, they had some real humdingers.
Yes. There were at least 3 baby boys named Cheese.
Yes.
Which is nice. I believe there was a character on The Wire named Cheese. Yeah, there was.
I have to point out at this point, there was also a child named Danish. And I was really hoping that,
they were siblings?
That they were twins, like Cheese and Danish. But I don't think that was the case.
Oh, little Cheese. And then some of the other names, Panda.
Yeah.
Rocket, which is a good, you want an explosive child that's just going to get out there in the world.
I have a Rocket in my neighborhood. He's great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And when in doubt. In terms of coming up with a name for your child, just name them after a primordial sea monster that rise in the prehistoric darkness and rivals the might of an ancient Hebrew deity. Just name your kid Leviathan, which somebody did.
I mean, there's no weight there. There's nothing there that would make that child feel sort of bogged down to fulfill his or her destiny. There's also Drago and Bullip. So all this kind of whirly-gig naming here made us wonder, how does this play out in something called nominative determinism?
Yeah, this is basically the idea that we're talking about here, except with science behind it. The idea that
a fancy name.
Yeah, the name that we're given determines who we are, how we behave, and how the world's going to treat us, how the world's going to perceive us. It really gets down into the complexity of language, right? We end up acquiring language, building language, using language as an operating system for the human brain and the system that we base all of our culture on. And what I was really struck with in researching this topic is that nominative determinism is kind of it's almost like a mistake in the programming or a side effect of the programming, that the name that you give an individual carries a lot of obvious weight. If you name your kid after a mythological hero, you're obviously drawing upon that. You can call your kid Thor. There's a certain Thorness that you're dragging in there. But then there's a lot of stuff that's happening at a subconscious level. It's just tendrils reaching out through the canvas of language.
I see what you mean. Like, the symbol wasn't necessarily meant to be internalized, but it's so easy for our brains to make that little walk over there. And we talked about this kind of in the last episode about how if you have a limb that's next to your limb and you begin to see it from your first person perspective, then you sort of adopt that limb as your own. All of a sudden you have 3 limbs. And we won't go into that. But the point is that it's really easy to sort of take these things on as yourself. And that is at the heart of nominative determinism. And I wanted to read this little bit from a Mental Floss article on the topic. Quote, Dr. Rich Dick Chop is an Austin urologist who is known for performing vasectomies, really. Other doctors at the same urology clinic include Dr. Hardiman and Dr. Wang.
Oh.
Is this coincidence? Probably. But there may be something there. That's why we're discussing it, obviously.
Well, in my experience, my father was a dentist, so I've always, from a very little kid, I would always notice the signs for dentist offices anywhere we went. And even then, I remember thinking, there are a lot of dentists who have the last name Payne, P-A-Y-N-E, then why, wouldn't you want to change that? Do you really want to be Dr. Payne when people go to get their teeth worked on? And I did a quick Google search before we came to the podcast chamber, and just page after page of dentists named Payne. And it makes you think, again, are they drawn to dentistry somehow subconsciously because of that name? Or, and then why maybe not change it if you're going to make a go at a business? Because you wouldn't hesitate to change the name of a business if the business name were somehow a counterpoint to what you're trying to, the experience that you're trying to sell to the customer. So it seems like you would want to do that with your professional name as well. I don't know.
I'm about to tell you something that I think might end up in an awkward silence.
Okay.
Moment. My gastroenterologist, his name is Dr. Sunshine.
Okay.
And I'm not kidding.
Wow.
Yeah. So think on that a moment, and then let's sort of switch gears here back to a boy named Sue, because apparently if you're a boy named Ashley mm-hmm. or Shannon, there are some things that will be meted out to you because of having that name. In fact, research psychologist David Figlio of Northwestern University in Illinois looked at millions of birth certificates, and then he broke them down by phonemics and behavior. And he found a bunch of different things, not just about Ashley and Shannon. But in terms of those names, he did find that the boys with names traditionally given to girls are more likely to misbehave than their counterparts with masculine names.
Which is interesting because it lines up with the song, right?
Mm-hmm.
The boy named Sue winds up getting in a lot of fights, has an embattled life that makes him tougher. They found that up into a certain age, I think it was like age six.
I think sixth grade.
Sixth grade, rather. Up into a certain point, it didn't really make any difference.
Mm-hmm.
But then sixth grade hits, and that's when the embattlement begins to really take hold. Suddenly, these male individuals with feminine names are misbehaving and acting out all the time.
Yeah, gender norms are in full force, right? Mm-hmm. And so you have kids who are really trying to reinforce that idea. And to make things worse, and I think this will be obvious, if there happened to be a girl with the name of Shannon or Ashley in the same class as that boy.
Oh, it just intensifies it.
Exactly. Because there you have confirmation that you have a feminine name because that kid is right there with it.
Now, as a side note, I wonder to what extent this phenomenon might disappear as hopefully culture becomes increasingly sensitive to the idea of gender, and that gender is not an issue of one fortress and another fortress? Or does that even trickle down to kids? Are kids always going to be boys versus girls?
I think it takes a while because I try with my own daughter to try to live in a, not a gender-free world, but to not make that as the starting point for conversations or decisions. Mm-hmm. But I do see her teachers maybe unconsciously putting that dynamic in play.
Hmm.
And really talking a lot about boys and girls, and the girls are lovely and the boys are handsome and the girls are well behaved and that so on and so forth.
Sugar and spice and everything nice.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. And to that point, I did want to point out that David Figlio found that girls with names that are relatively feminine in high school choose advanced coursework in humanities. And less feminine names that are given to girls, those girls are more likely to choose math and science courses.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So here's an idea, and one that I am really having trouble by. The idea that a name could not only determine how the society will view you and how you view your own place in society, but could a name actually make you more prone to disease or make you more unhealthy?
I know what you're talking about. You're talking about the Brady Bunch study.
Did they call it the Brady Bunch?
I don't think they call it the Brady Bunch study. But it was a study about people with a surname of Brady. This is in Dublin, right?
Mm-hmm.
Researchers in Dublin, they wanted to discover whether or not a person's name might influence their health. And so they looked at whether people with a surname Brady had a higher incidence of bradycardia. That is a slow heart rate.
Which, how did they get funding for this? This just sounds insane to me, where someone, and as we'll see, the research is really fast. I mean, the findings are really fascinating. But who said, I wonder if people with the name Brady are more likely to suffer from bradycardia? Like, it's almost as to propose that question, you have to feel like the answer might be yes.
Yeah, I also kind of wondered to what degree were people familiar with the term bradycardia and knew about it and maybe internalized it? Because that's the idea, right?
Yeah, I was not familiar with the term, so it didn't play into my view of the Brady Bunch.
Yeah, researchers used data from a hospital database and the percentage of the population with the surname Brady, of course. And they determined through use of online telephone listings in Dublin between 2007 and 2013 that there were something like 579 Bradys listed in total and 1,012 pacemakers fitted during this time. Hmm. And the median age of the patients, 77 years old, and the proportion of pacemaker recipients among Bradys, 1.38%, was significantly higher than among non-Bradys, 0.61%.
Okay.
So there's something there. It's not huge. I mean, we're not saying, well, wow, huge. This completely says that this is going on.
Right. It's like a number of the things that we're talking about here, a number of the examples, rather. On an individual basis, you're just looking around at the people you know, there's a good chance it's not going to line up. But when you look at larger population groups and larger sample groups, that's where you begin to see these interesting statistics to emerging.
Yeah, and they did say in the study, hey, there are limitations to this. We don't know the patient's background. We don't know if they were related and they had genetic predispositions and this could have skewed results. We also don't know whether or not, because this is a city center for this procedure, that drew more Bradys, and so that kind of skewed the results as well. So, it's just kind of an interesting thing that's put out there.
You know, you begin to wonder, should I name my, just to be on the safe side, I'll just go ahead and name my kid Methuselah, or, just to ensure that they have a long life. But then am I tempting fate? What happens when a kid named Methuselah dies at age 50? Then you're going to feel really I did that by giving him this name and trying to force the universe to make them live a really long time.
I think it's okay. I think that sometimes kids will buck against their names. Mm-hmm. And this was actually in one of the articles that we read. I'll have to look at it in a moment and bring up the title. But the article was saying that there was a father who named his kid Loser Lane.
And then, on purpose? Or was this one of those incidents where they thought it would be pronounced differently?
Well, you decide after I tell you the next kid's name.
Okay.
Winner Lane. Okay. Loser ends up to be like an upstanding citizen. I don't know if he's a cop or something, but I mean, he's done well for himself. Mm-hmm. Winner turns out to be like in the pokey all the time.
Huh.
He's crime ridden.
What kind of father was this? I'm just imagining. I mean, it's like a B.F. Skinner type of ploy here.
Well, did you hear about the sociologist who wrote Parentology? He named his children their first names. His daughter is E.
Okay.
And then his son is Yo. And then beyond like their first names, they have a million other names tacked onto it. And then they are not of Asian descent, but he decided to throw in some Asian names in there just to kind of throw off the paradigm, he says, of immigrants taking on that country's name.
Interesting.
Does that make sense?
Like, yeah.
Mess with the paradigm there. Anyway, there was an interview with his kids, and his kids were like, yeah, we're fine with it. But, sometimes there are sociologists who unleash some experiments at home.
Yeah. Now, of course, we'll discuss this some more as well. But, of course, any name you give somebody does not exist in a vacuum. There are plenty of other factors at play. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, this will come directly into play.
Today's episode is brought to you by eBay. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then, through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. If you haven't heard of Visible, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. Having a one-line plan means you only need you to save. No estranged roommates, exes, cousins twice removed, or AI-powered humanoid robots needed. And because $25 a month really means $25 a month, you can call, text, stream, whatever, as much as you want without worrying about getting dinged at the end of the month.
No hidden fees, no surprises. No, really. It's like the old saying goes, you can't judge a book by its cover, but you can judge a company by its name. So spread the word. Tell all your friends there's a wireless company out there with transparency in their name, and they're called Visible. Start saving on wireless today at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Klass as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There's still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI in revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, we're back. We're going to talk a little bit about Freakonomics, because this is a book, if you're not familiar with it, that sort of takes this socioeconomic view of things that we don't normally apply that sort of lens to, and tries to figure out if there's some sort of algorithm that is driving our behavior and the things that we do. And of course, naming came up in Freakonomics. Steve Levitt, the author of Freakonomics, and Harvard economist Roland G. Fryer, they wanted to see if the trend of black parents naming their children distinctly non-white names, they wanted to see if this had an impact on those kids later on, socially and economically.
Yeah, so what Fryer did is he looked at birth certificate information for every child born in California since 1961. And what he found initially matches up pretty well with I think everyone's experience of names. Up until the early 70s, there was a more overlap in white-black names.
Mm-hmm.
But then by 1980, you see an explosion of distinctly black names. And some of the fuel for this you can find in the Black Power movement, in the push to accentuate African culture and African roots. And so you see this divide. So suddenly you see more distinctly black names, mm-hmm. increasing number of distinctly black names in the black community. So Fryer found that the data showed that on average a person with a distinctly black name had a worse life outcome than an individual with a more common name. Now, it's important to note, and the authors of Freakonomic note, that it's not the fault of their names, okay? It has to do with the parents who select a particular sort of name. So, again, like I said earlier, names don't exist in a vacuum.
Mm-hmm.
Names are coming from parents. And so you see trends where certain names are more likely to be bestowed by members of various levels of the socioeconomic scale. And this is in the data that they discuss in Freakonomics concerns more than just the white-black divide, but also the economic divide.
Mm-hmm.
What names are more common among lower-income households versus higher-income households?
So we already know that there are unconscious associations. There's all sorts of biases mm-hmm. here.
Yeah, not to count out just overt bias and racism.
Exactly.
As well.
Yeah. So this is really interesting. LaTanya Russell, a Harvard professor of government and technology, she published a study about search results in Google related to name searches and racial profiling in the AdWorks for Google.
Huh.
And she did this after a search for her name served up an ad next to her name with find an arrest record.
Mm.
And it was actually a colleague of hers who was not black, who they were searching something about some of the work that they were doing.
Right.
And in the search, they were, of course, looking for their names to see how that would come up. And he was the first person to tag, like, oh, that's weird. Mine doesn't come up with this arrest record ad over here, but yours does. And so he started to do a couple of different searches and came up with the idea of, I think it's kind of tied to black sounding names. And she was appalled. She said, no. I'm a scientist here. I'm going to conduct a formal, mm-hmm. Study of this, and I'm going to prove you wrong, because she didn't want to believe that that was actually like racial profiling was happening in the AdWorks. And she found that a black identified name was 25% more likely than a white identified name to get an ad suggestive of an arrest record.
Huh.
Which is troublesome, because
yeah.
you see that, and it does have this sort of association of like, well, perhaps this person does have an arrest record.
Right. And then that's just more fire to just sort of the subliminal messaging that's coming at you through your search engine, through one of the ways that you're interacting with the world. And so, at least subliminally, your search engine is saying, hey, you're the type of person who might be arrested. And then you're going to absorb that information and have to deal with it.
And as David Eagleman might say, the problem with this is that all of this is happening under the cover of unconscious, right? Your unconscious is meeting all of this out and serving it up to your conscious as this idea, and you don't even know what's going on. And he calls this implicit bias. This implicit bias is within us. We're not aware of it. It's acting sort of independently to our consciousness. And he said that this is borne out in reaction times and hesitations during computer models that allow us to like or dislike images or words to show how we're driven by our unconscious. And he gives a couple of examples of this, but the one that I like best is this one that begins with a screen that has like and dislike at the top
okay.
of the screen. And then in the middle, there is a name that appears. So he says, like, you could have the name of a religion appearing in the middle. And he said, what's interesting about this is not just the speed of the participants selecting like or dislike, but that this program actually tracks the trajectory of the mouse movements, and it can show the drift.
Oh.
So it shows like maybe you're going toward no, and then you correct yourself and go to, or not no, maybe you're going toward dislike, and then you correct yourself and go toward like. And he's saying that that is showing that you're doing the more socially appropriate response. Your conscious is catching up to your unconscious and correcting it. So he's saying that even people with certainty about their attitudes and beliefs, they can find themselves surprised and sometimes appalled by what's lurking within their brains that they're not even aware of.
Huh. So it's like the gut reaction versus the actual conscious thought reaction. Sort of, if someone were to, say, offer someone a beer for lunch at work, their gut instinct might be to say, yes, I would like a beer. And then their conscious reaction might be, no, I don't drink beer at work, or no, I don't drink beer at all. Why would I even entertain the idea? But for that split second, you do.
Yeah, your hand might start to reach out. And you're
yeah.
like, oh, no, thanks.
Yeah.
So that gets us into this idea of implicit association, because that's where we get into this idea of unconscious commonality. So, you know, here's a good example that I think we've talked about before. If your name is Dennis or mm-hmm. Denise, there's some data out there, and Eagleman talks about this in his book, that you perhaps could become a dentist. you're internalizing this association between the way that your name sounds and this profession.
Yeah, people, Denise or Dennis, more are disproportionately more likely to become dentist. Laura, Lawrence, more likely to become a lawyer. George or Georgiana, more likely to become a geologist. And it's interesting. My birth name is, of course, Podrick. So that is why I became a podcaster, I guess.
Very nice. Podrick. You know what? That may show up in 2020. It's like one of the most popular baby names.
Really? Just because of Game of Thrones?
No, I was thinking because of the profession.
Oh yeah. Cause
everybody will be a podcaster.
Everybody wants their kid to be a podcaster because that's where the money is.
That's right. Yeah. Yep. All right. So another layer of this is something called implicit ego. And so that's that, not just that unconscious connection that you have, like, oh, someone is like me or that's like me, but actually feeling like, you know, like your ego is bound up in this idea of that thing or that person.
And we do a lot of this. We've talked about this before. When we attach our ego to something, it might be a sports team, or it might just be, it might be an individual. It might be a cup of tea.
All right. So here's a nice example. Eagleman says that when students read an essay by Rasputin, in this example, they also read a bit of biographical detail about Rasputin, including his birthday, which, by the way, was manipulated in the text to be the same as the reader's.
Yeah.
So when they read that and that little data bit, that student gave Rasputin a more generous rating.
Yeah, that's really interesting. It's just the mere insertion of that date gives you the subconscious link with this individual, and so you feel like a little more than usual, like Grigori Rasputin is like you. He's one of me. I agree with everything he did to some extent.
Yeah, and then on another level, it's like, yeah, go January 7th.
Yeah.
Team January 7th, all of us who were born under there, you're a winner.
Oh, man, I actually experience this quite a lot when I'm taking the train to work, because I take the westbound train and then I take the northbound train. And when I'm waiting on the northbound train, there are two northbound trains.
Mm-hmm.
One is the Doraville train, one is the North Springs.
Mm-hmm.
Only the North Springs train actually will get me all the way to work. And so I'll find myself standing there, the Doraville train arrives, the wrong train arrives, and people are getting on board, and I'll actually think to myself, oh, those Doraville train people, they're the worst. And just judging on them, you know, hardcore, even though there's like, why? And then I'll ask myself, why am I doing that? Why am I attaching my ego to the North Springs train and judging everyone who rides the Doraville train?
Star-bellied sneeches, my friend.
Exactly.
Dr. Seuss shows up again in the podcast. So, you know, you also have priming going on, too.
Mm-hmm.
Some of it's unconscious, some of it's not so unconscious. I was thinking about Allison Loudermilk because she shared with me that she, this is actually implicit ego and priming. She shared with me that she buys almond milk because she really enjoys the layout, the graphic layout of almond milk. And it also kind of reminds her of her name, Allison Loudermilk, almond milk.
Interesting. That was because this is another study that David Eagleman brings up where they had, consumers, test subjects, consider different brands of fictional teas,
mm-hmm.
and they were more likely to go with the fictional tea that contained the first three letters of their first name. So, I mean, this is why, of course, I like Robina tea and you like Juilliard tea.
Yes, I love Juilliard tea.
Yeah.
Is that a real tea?
No, I don't think they're real teas. But the idea is that we would be drawn to those brands,
mm-hmm.
in theory, because they contain bits of our name and, in a sense, are a bit of us.
Gosh, don't you just feel like such a simpleton sometimes?
Yeah.
This is the kind of stuff that gives you, like, sometimes you're like, glorious being in the universe, taking in all the wonderments of life. And then sometimes you're like, gosh, we're just such simpletons, just, you know, being manipulated left and right, even knowing it.
Well, because so much of our experience of the world and understanding of it and our culture is based in language. And again, these kind of free associations, it's kind of a flaw in the system or just kind of a side effect of this system being in place.
Well, I will tell you, having done the research on this, I have decided that if I do have another child, mm-hmm. I know the exact perfect name to give that child.
Oh, let's hear it.
Nominative determinism.
Okay, or ND. Yeah.
Yeah, or your NOMD.
NOMD?
Yeah.
NOMD is a pretty good one. Pretty good.
Yeah. I mean, don't you think, like, that they'd have to explain that name over and over again, and they'd be super aware of everything they did and everything that they perceived, mm-hmm. and they would just be really overanalytical and perhaps even in a fetal position as a result.
And
that's
then,
a bad
and
idea.
Just change it eventually too, because didn't Moon Unit Zappa?
Did she change it?
I seems like I thought she might have changed.
Or maybe
name.
She just goes by Moon.
Maybe.
I don't know. I feel like if you're a Zappa kid, you just roll with it.
Probably. But I have heard tales of children with sort of hippie dream child names changing them to more socially normal, acceptable names. Because, again, that comes back to just the whole idea of the name is so weird because, like, I have a really normal name, Robert Lamb. There's nothing phenomenal about it except that the last name inspires the image of an animal and forces children to make baaing noises at you throughout school.
Mm-hmm.
But for the most part, it's a normal name, so I've never really felt a particular attachment to it. I've never hated it, but I'm just kind of like, oh, I guess I'm Robert Lamb. But so it made me want to give my son a name that really stood out and was amazing. But then, as we've discussed here, that's not necessarily the way to go.
Well, and that's what some of this, some of the articles that we read sort of touched on. When you look at a name, essentially it is sort of all the hopes and fears that a parent puts into that name.
Yeah.
For the child. So it kind of makes sense that, you know, people would name their children, more normal names if they really thought that it was important that you assimilate to society. Or a unique name if they really thought that individualism was very important. So you can kind of see all of that at play, and it's fascinating.
Yeah, and I guess that's where middle names are nice. You can throw a little something in there so that they can eventually choose. Do they want to go by the first name? Do they want to go by the middle name? Do they want to go with initials?
Yeah.
Give them some – this is my take on the matter anyway. Give them some options so that they can – change their identity around in a way that suits their needs at the time. Because inevitably, children are going to go through periods where they're going to really want to assimilate, where assimilation is part of their genetic mission to blend in so that they can actually survive long enough to breed. But then on the other hand, they're going to reach a point inevitably, or hopefully inevitably, where they'll want to stand out, where they'll want to be their own person and be unique. All right, so there you go. A little insight into the naming process. All of you have names, and if you don't have a name, actually, that's even more amazing. Is that even possible? Can you not name?
No, I don't think so.
Like to name somebody just a blank, you know, just an absence of name, and that becomes the name.
Whoa! And how emotionally saddled would you be with the absence of a being, of a name, of a sound? Right?
Yeah.
God, I was about to rap there with a being, with a name, with a sound.
But
bring it round.
So all of you have names. A number of you have engaged in the naming process. So we'd love to hear from everyone. How have you grown up with your name? How has it affected your outcome in life? What kind of thought did you put into naming your child, if you happen to have one of those? Let us know. We would love to hear from you. You can find us in all the normal places. The mothership is, of course, stufftoblowyourmind.com. That is the place to go for your Stuff to Blow Your Mind fix. You will find all of the podcast episodes. You will find over 1,000 blog posts and counting. You will find videos. You will find links out to our social media accounts, such as Facebook, Twitter, Tumblr, our YouTube account, Mind Stuff Show.
And hey, if you have name regret and you want to share with us the name you wish you had been given, you can do that. You can share any other stories you have with us about names. So send us an email at blowthemind@discovery.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com.
Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. The future of wireless is here, and it's transparent. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees, no surprises, no, really.
What are you waiting for? Get with the times and switch to Visible at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And now, for a limited time, get more Cedar Point fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last long. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.